Let's go ahead and go in five.
Hello.
Are we all good? Is everything good?
We're all good.
All right. Let's go in five.
Hello.
Welcome to episode 44 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's Fantasy Manager and Jesus Montero truther, Brett Sayer, and my fellow authors, someone who foolhardily offered to try and record Tino live in Arizona again, Mauricio Rubio, and a man with surprisingly excellent taste in cheeses, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, everyone. Say hi and tell them where they may find you on the interwebs. And Brett, let's start with you.
You can find me at baseballperspectives.com and thedynastyguru.com on Twitter at dynastyguru. Mal?
You can find me at baseballperspectives.com and you can find me on Twitter at mrubio52. Craig?
You can find me on Baseball Prospectus and the Dynasty Guru. And you can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in currently disabled. Goldstein. Ben?
Fair enough. You can also find me at Baseball Prospectus and the Dynasty Guru, and you can find me at Ben Carsley on Twitter. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle, and you can ask us questions and tell us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. How's everyone doing tonight? It seems like we have a fairly loose group right now.
Doing great. Doing great right now.
I'm a little under the weather.
Oh,
I got a great deal on some vacuum bags.
it's a good night. Good night for you, Brett.
Good night all around.
Not only did you get a deal on vacuum bags, but we're going to talk about two lists tonight.
God damn!
It's a great day to be Brett Sayer.
I'm pretty sure that's illegal in the state of Alabama.
Okay. What, counting?
Oh. Oh, we're off to a bang. making Alabama vacuum jokes and Brian Johnson's throwing on my TV. It doesn't get much better than...
I was going to say, I think we're all pretty happy because we're all watching baseball.
Exactly. It really has significantly lightened our moods. And I think we're also probably happy because this is it. This is the last week of positional rankings. This is the last Tino in which we're going to discuss a list, hopefully at least for a week or two. So we're going to talk about relievers real quick, not for very long. We might actually have Brett's wife come on and tell you about them because it's just a crapshoot. But before that, we're going to talk about Brett's Dynasty 101, which is a real list with some actual value. So look forward to that in the second half of the podcast. But before that, we'll start out with reader emails, which we are wont to do every once in a while. And this week, our first reader email is from Nick. And Nick says, Ben, you should probably open your Gmail to the first email right away so that you don't have to stall while you try to find the email while you're hosting at the same time. Gentlemen and Craig, I have the first overall pick in our minor league keeper draft, NL only standard 5x5. I have the first, 9th, and 10th overall picks. Based on the BP Dynasty rankings, the top available players are Kyle Schwarber, Steven Matz, Michael Taylor, Aaron Nola, and Dan Vogelbach. All 2014 draftees and signees are also available, guys like Trey Turner, Kolek, Holmes, etc. I currently have an offer on the table of two 2016 first-round picks in exchange for the first overall pick this year. I'm not in love with any of the available players, but would take Schwarber if I don't accept the offer. Should I make that trade? So we'll get into the second half of this very strange email later, but let's answer the actual question first. Craig, lead us off.
I'm going to say no. I mean, obviously, there's more value in the present, which is why this guy's offering two 2016 first-round picks. And while there is some lack of impact at the top of this draft, and it is a little heavier on depth, I still think, you know, you have the first overall pick. Who knows what those two picks are going to be in next year's draft? Obviously, it's going to depend on where these teams finish. I'd rather take, you know, the bird in the hand in this situation and just grab Schwarber. Or, I mean, I guess I'm confused or maybe surprised that the cube, like a Yasmani Tomas, isn't available. And if he is, I'd look at him as well, along with Schwarber. But I would just take the first, ninth, and tenth picks in this draft and, you know, beef up my minor league system in a big way, because I think you're going to be able to get a lot of talent with those three picks. And I don't know. At this point, I'm just into improving my team as quickly as possible and waiting another year for who knows what type of draft and who knows when those picks are going to be. It just doesn't appeal to me in the slightest. Brett, do you have a different angle on it?
No, that last part was the most important part, is that you don't know when these picks are going to be. I mean, there are next year's draft is going to be is essentially going to be in an NL league. It's going to be a guy from Arizona and a guy from Colorado likely at the top of that list. So you're hanging on to those picks and you're picking high in the draft. You kind of better hope those teams take hitters instead of pitchers. But I mean, we're not anywhere close to that unless you can guarantee that one of these picks is the number one pick, then you don't do it. You take what's on the board now.
I disagree. I'm not really in love with any of these players, and I mean, I certainly see your point, and it's not like I think that's wrong necessarily. Personally, in dynasty leagues, I'm someone who frequently uses a rather deep inventory of prospects to make trades. So I am trading middling prospects all the time because I think people go gaga for them. It's a cool phrase I just picked up this week. So I think none of these names really stands out for me. I'm not as high on Schwarber as Brett is. You know, Mats, Taylor, Nola, they're all nice guys to add to your system, but none of them are deal breakers for me. So I actually think I would make that deal. I think I would take the two picks next year.
Well, but you just said that, you know, people go gaga over middling picks or middling prospects. If you think that's Schwarber, then you take him and trade him for a major leaguer, in my opinion, rather than someone like rather than two picks that are even further away. Well, I guess would be my thought.
I mean, it's just delayed gratification. And then I'd have, you know, right now I have three and then maybe one next year. If I do it this way, I'd have two this year and then two next year. So it's, if having a constant reservoir of, I mean, if they're also first round picks, they're probably not going to be prospects who are demonstrably worse than Schwarber in my view. I totally get why Brett wouldn't do it, because Brett has a higher opinion of Schwarber than I do. But I'm betting you're going to get a prospect in like the, you know, top 50 to 70 range with those picks next year.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with Ben, actually, because he also has the 9th and 10th overall picks, you know, within that class as well. So, I mean, you know, I think the chances that he's going to improve his minor league stock this year with picks number 9 and 10, and I think you're going to get a pretty nice prospect, especially in NL only like that. And I think that it's worth taking the gamble that the two overall picks next year are going to give you something in return that you're going to be really happy with. So I think having 9 and 10 really changes my answer here.
Well, does it? I mean, having 9 and 10 in an NL only is like having 18 or 20 in a mixed. I mean, you're eliminating half the player pool. And for picks next year, you're also eliminating half the player pool. So even if he gets the fourth overall pick, you know, the top five fantasy prospects from next year's draft are going to be gone at that point. So it's you have to factor that in as well.
And I thought, Brett, your best point is who has the top picks going forward. And I mean, I guess I haven't looked at the draft list for next year. I don't have it memorized, but I don't know how many NL teams are in the top 10. And if it's only two or three teams or whatever it ends up being, like, you have to really hope those guys get really interesting players, or like like Brett said, that they take hitters because you're really not going to want to wait another year to draft a pitcher going to Colorado or something like that.
I will definitely concede that I don't think I gave enough mental weight to this being an only league. I think that's a really strong point. I think in a mixed league, I maybe still agree with my original sentiment and that I'm okay with not, you know, grabbing a Schwarber or a Mats here. In an NL only, after hearing you guys speak, I think I'm actually swayed.
I am but not. I'm going to stick by my gun.
Well, we should get to the more important part of this email anyway. We're just going to start off weird tonight. We're not going to ease into it like we normally do. We're just going to get weird immediately. And this guy's
weird.
Yeah, this guy's email continues. Side note, and it most certainly is a side note. Our fantasy league is entering its 32nd season. It has included many prominent LA sports media members over the years and currently counts a former Dodgers VP and, more notably, the voice of VH1's Behind the Music as team owners. I envision the Tino podcast reaching dizzying heights one day, but then it all gets derailed when Craig inevitably chokes to death on some shitty sandwich, Mama Cass style. Imagine, if you will, the dulcet tones of my friend and colleague. The cast of Tino was riding high. Brett Sayer lived in a perpetual state of euphoria after the Cubs World Series win in 2017. Raimel Tapia hit .403 in 2018, much to Mao's delight. And Ben was thrilled when Boston was awarded the 2024 Summer Olympics bid. But on a fateful Tuesday afternoon, resident shit disturber and sandwich expert Craig Goldstein ordered a pedestrian ham and Swiss on rye, and then it all went wrong. Cue music's thing. We could even try and get Enya to sing a melodic ballad lamenting Craig's demise. What the fuck? What does this mean?
By the
also,
way,
let's all point out one thing that's wrong with this. One at a time. Go ahead, Craig.
Well, first of all, it all went wrong when I chose a ham and Swiss. I would never.
You would never do that.
That's
you would never.
That's where the decline really begins. That's where it all goes downhill.
The thing I will point out is that Brett is not a Cubs fan. So if the Cubs win the World Series in 2017, I imagine Brett will be really depressed that the Mets still aren't good. Anyone else?
I will point out the fact that this is paying way too much attention to a Craig Goldstein death fantasy.
Well, that I didn't have an issue with.
I actually think that's pretty standard. I don't.
Brett, anything
personal.
Else?
Just personal.
There's one more Brett-related mistake here.
Yeah, he spelled my name wrong.
Yes, he did. He used two T's. I feel like once every 3 weeks we bring up not to spell your name with two T's. And
yeah, that keeps happening.
Yeah.
I feel like what happened is he got like he confused you with Brett Taylor.
That may actually be the case.
Because of the Cubs connection and the spell.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough of that. Our second query of the week comes from Patrick. The subject line is Drunken Foolishness. Hey team, got loaded on Friday night and made a hasty trade in my 16-team points dynasty league. Pitching is a tough get in our league, and I traded Yasmani Tomas for Matt Moore straight up. First, was this a dumb decision in a vacuum? Brett, you can speak to that. Second, does it make any difference that we had no spot for Tomas to play? And Moore could kick it up in July. Thank you, guys, and perhaps thank you, Mr. Jameson, Patrick. So Patrick is a cool guy who drinks. I think he's made that clear. I'm a fan of that, so nice job, Patrick. Drinking fun, always do it. I think this is a pretty interesting trade because these are two guys who are fairly difficult to evaluate, at least in my experience, this preseason. So, Mao, go ahead. Did Jameson do Patrick wrong here?
I don't think Jameson did Patrick wrong here. I'm going to preface this by saying this isn't necessarily a deal I would do. I'm very wary of Matt Moore, but I do understand the valuations between Tomas and Moore being similar to the point where if pitching's pretty difficult to come by and you feel like you want to take a gamble on somebody, Matt Moore is a pretty decent person to try and see if he can hit some of that upside lottery on. So, you know, Tomas he's a big unknown. He's coming over from Cuba. I mean, we don't really know what his production level is going to be. Nobody's, you know, really got a really good idea of what he's going to do. And if your offense is as loaded as you say it is, and just the way that you've kind of framed this question, I actually like this trade for you, you know, quite a bit. So, you know, I don't necessarily think I would do it, but given your situation and kind of given the context that your league is in, you know, I think it's okay. Craig?
Yeah, I think it's fine. I don't know that I like it just because Moore wasn't really – not just because he wasn't really what we thought he was going to be before the injury, but I guess I would have rather trade Tomas for someone who was going to be healthy all year. I mean, control is kind of the last thing that comes back for people after Tommy John, and Moore was kind of lacking that in the first place, so I'm a little – extra wary on him, especially for this year. He might be someone I'd be targeting towards the end of this year or in this coming off season if he struggles, assuming it'll improve over time. But you know, on a pure talent for talent level, it's fine. I wouldn't be, you know, crying at night about it, but it's not ideal to me. Ben?
Yeah, not disastrous, but in a vacuum, I think I'd probably take Tomas right now.
Yeah.
Brett?
yeah, I agree. The only thing I'll add is that Tomas gets a little bit of a tick down in the points league, but not enough that I still wouldn't prefer Tomas. Yeah. But it's close enough.
I think Craig's point is a good one, that next season is probably the better time to buy on more.
Yes. That I agree on.
All right. Well, I thought those were some interesting names, at least. So good job, good effort. Let's go with the next email, which is from Dave. Dave says, "Hey guys, sorry I don't have any humor, inside jokes, or jabs at Craig to open the email. I debated how to word this, knowing half my league is on BP and several listen every week. But after typing up some vague comments and questions, I realized that as soon as you read my league specifications out loud, my league mates will know who sent this in. Oh well. NL only Dynasty League. 12 teams, 37 men rosters, usual 23-man active roster, 300 cap, MLB player prices increase $2 a year, players and minor salary stays the same."
Ben, this, really quick, was this from the Bat Signal or was this sent to Tino?
No, this was sent to Tino, and you can tell that because he didn't then just keep asking us weird variations of the same question immediately. Unbeknownst to Bat Signal users, it's not a live chat software platform. It's just a Q&A. Anyway, in this type of league, Dave wants to know how much true setup men are worth. He says, "In our draft this year, there are only two closers available for auction, and just a small number of true eighth-inning guys left. But we all know that closers fail and spring up out of nowhere. To win, you need real bargains that can be gained from mostly high-end prospects, cheap and occasionally getting relief pitchers who turn into closers. How much is too much to spend on guys like Strope, Broxton, Romo, and lesser setup guys like AJ Ramos?" So it's a fairly interesting question, and it ties well into relievers, which we're unfortunately going to talk about a little bit later. But Brett, you know, he said this is a $300 cap league. I guess maybe one way to attack this is how much would you be allocating toward a player or two, like he mentions?
Yeah, I in an NL-only league, I'd be looking more for guys who can return a little bit more value, even if they don't get any saves. But for guys like for Romo and possibly AJ Ramos, I mean, if for a $300 cap, depending on what his situation is, I think $3 to $5 is probably reasonable for sort of the high end of that group. You don't really want to speculate too much, just because it's so unpredictable. But I think there are certainly probably maybe 15 to 20 guys that are solid performers that are close enough to a closer role that they're worth spending in that range for. I wouldn't do it on Jonathan Broxton though. That's just a bad idea.
I don't know why this is NL only week.
Yeah, it seems to be.
All these questions are just NL only leagues.
Yeah. Craig, you have any thoughts?
No, although I guess I don't know. I don't think Broxton's that bad of an option. I mean, he's nothing special, but we're not exactly talking about special people right now. So I don't know. I definitely think Romo is a good option. Casilla is a good pitcher and has been, but is also, I mean, it's they're relievers, so they go into a bad run, and Romo has a good fallback. Take guys who are in situations maybe like closer committees, like LA is going to have while Jansen is out. I mean, Peralta's probably going to pick up some saves there and is going to be a solid setup guy. But he's also not at all like the guy that Brett is talking about who's going to return value otherwise. But he might be someone you want to take early in the year and then dump for a middle reliever with better rate stats. But I mean, I don't know. I can't bring myself to care about these. I just churn through them in most leagues, to be honest. Just pick up people who are going well and then drop them if you need to. Ben?
That's pretty much what I was going to say. I mean, the temptation is there to go out and spend more money than what Brett suggested on, you know, a high strikeout guy who's in his maybe first full year or something like that. But they just fail so often that, you know, for every Ken Giles you get a couple Jose Capayans. I know that's a dated reference, but that's just what popped into my mind first.
I should have used him in my article. I really should have.
I totally forgot about Jose Capayan.
So live and learn, Craig. But yeah, I'm totally with Craig on this. When it comes to guys that are quite frankly this bad already, just stream them. You're always going to find someone.
We should also throw out that Keith Cromer wrote an article, basically. He wrote about the NL relief pitchers on BP today, and it's worth checking out because he goes pretty deep.
Yeah, I mean, read Keith. I don't have really much to add other than Adam Ottavino has created player face. I don't know if you've ever seen a photo of him, but he totally looks like a computer-generated simulation, especially in the face region.
That's important.
Very important.
I guess if we're throwing out names, I was just looking through Keith's article. Neil Ramirez is a really good one in terms of just a strikeout and ratio guy. I'd take him over Strope, actually.
Although I have the sneaking suspicion that Dave is very, very familiar with Neil Ramirez. But
like intimately? What does that mean?
You know. Might sleep with him Dave? Sometimes.
Dave's the guy who asked the question, Craig.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Yeah.
No, if we're throwing out names, the one guy I like people aren't really talking about is Sean Kelly in San Diego. I think it's a really good fit for him in that park. I think, you know, there's enough. He's got enough cover with people talking about Kevin Quackenbush and a couple other guys. I think you could get him probably for a buck, even in a league this deep. And he's a guy who I like quite a bit, actually.
We don't say Kevin Quackenbush enough.
No, we don't.
That should be a weekly thing. All right. I really want to get to this next question because it's also just weird for a lot of different reasons. Strong, weird email week. This email is from Erich. That's probably not how he says his name, but that's what he deserves. Erich says, "Hey, guys. I started listening to your pod because people deeply analyzing trivial nonsense helps me fall asleep. However, you'd love Flags Fly Forever. However, I joined the Startup Dynasty League and have started paying closer attention. You do a great job. I'm trying to convince my tightwad league mates of the importance of making this a money league. I'm sure that otherwise mediocre and bad teams will just give up, especially when looking at a 2-year rebuilding process. Plus, I don't think we'll be able to recruit new players when needed because most people will assume it's not a serious league and probably be right. I even have an ingenious scheme for a progressive jackpot to be paid to the first team to win the consolation playoffs 1 year and make the championship game the next. This would keep every team engaged year-round, making leaving the league a bitter pill because you'd have to walk away from the jackpot, and make recruiting a breeze because the new player would have a shot at the jackpot without paying into it. What are your thoughts? I'd like to appeal to your authority if you agree. This isn't enough foolishness for me, so I'm also doing a fantasy weather league this year. It's where you only draft David Weathers. No, I'm kidding. It's draft and hold. you choose U.S. states and are scored on tornadoes, high temperature, hurricanes, blizzards, property damage, and death toll. This one is free because it's a dumb experiment, but we'd love to have one or more fantasy experts participate. Maybe you know some. Keep up the great work, Erich. So, I don't even know where to begin. First of all, Erich, E-R-I-C-H is not how you spell Eric. So, go back to the well on that one. Back to the drawing board. Not good. Not good for you. Probably not your fault, but still not a great look. I don't even really want to answer the real thing. I think the jackpot system is fairly interesting. I might tweak it a little because it sounds like right now the only way you would get the jackpot is if you win the Consolation League and then win the full league the next season, which seems very specific and might not even happen if the league lasts, like, I don't know, 10 years. But I do think the idea of having a jackpot that, you know, rewards people who aren't playing for the top is something that would appeal to me. What do you guys think?
I think it's an interesting idea. I mean, there are all kinds of like little quirky jackpots that you can put in there to make people pay attention. I mean, I don't know what kind of a league it is. I've seen leagues where there is a jackpot. It's a head-to-head league, and there's a jackpot paid out if you get a perfect week, if you go 10-0 against an opponent, which. Get happens a little too often to qualify for this, but there are all sorts of stuff you can think about for there. But no, I don't want to join a league where a category is death toll. No.
Yeah, strong agree on the not joining leagues where death is rewarded. Like very, very much so.
I don't know. I'm kind of in on the death toll.
Do you think they talk about like Katrina like we talk about Mike Trout?
Oh my gosh. We are going down a dark path. A very dark path right here.
Oh, we didn't make the league. This is not
I'm just gonna say I'm a little bit in on the death toll, but I wanna say that Matt Collins is the expert that he needs in this league.
This is really true. He's Masson Insider Matt Collins is definitely who you want.
Masson and Weather Insider Matt Collins is the guy that you need on something like this.
Weather Insider.
I don't like this progressive jackpot. I'm not a fan.
Shocking.
I like the weather. I like the fantasy weather. I don't like the jackpot.
Okay, wait. So let's just clarify. Craig, in on death toll, out on fantasy jackpot.
Correct.
Cool.
I'm in on death pools, by the way, as well, where you just you select people and whoever dies next, you know, like celebrities, stuff like that.
Do you want to play in one? Because I can send you information on one.
Well, we'll talk. We'll talk after a break.
Okay.
Just don't pick Enya.
Welcome back to episode 44 of Tino. I hope you used that time to determine what sort of horrible fantasy league you would like to participate in as soon as this year. Right now we're not going to talk about relief pitchers because my earnest hope is that this segment goes so long that we can just avoid talking about relief pitchers altogether. And first we are going to talk about Brett Sayer's top 101 Dynasty League prospects list. Probably the most popular fantasy piece we have on the site on a year-to-year basis, and for good reason. This thing is well-researched, it's very engaging, it's pretty funny, and aside from the Kyle Schwarber ranking, it's pretty damn reasonable. So usually this is the point where we'd give keys to Brett and, you know, sort of he'd walk us through his list, but instead we have decided to put Brett on the defensive, and Craig Mao and I are going to take turns asking Brett for questions instead. We're not asking him four questions. It's not Jeopardy. We're going to ask him questions, and then he'll give responses, you know, much like Bat Signal should work. So go online to BP and sort of call this up while you listen if you can. It's a pretty helpful resource. But we'll try to also mention where people are ranked as we ask these questions to give you a general sense while we deliver this in audio format. So, Brett, I will ask you the first question of the evening. Miguel Sano is ranked at 5. Corey Seager is ranked at 6. I would argue that Corey Seager has a higher floor than Miguel Sano. So my question is, what does this ranking say about what you think Sano's ceiling is?
It says that as much as I love Seager, and I really love Seager, Sano has special fantasy upside. He has 40-plus homer potential upside. You know, the batting average may always be a little bit of a risk, but, you know, Sano is, it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility that he could be a, 260 hitter. He has a good eye. He's not a, he doesn't have issues with recognition. It's just a matter of him getting more reps against, against high end pitching, which was really the bummer about him having Tommy John last year. So, I mean, it sets him back a little bit just because obviously from an ETA standpoint, yes, but though he needs those reps in order to be able to, you know, put his best foot forward and trying to tap into both getting the most out of that power at the major league level and being able to hit for an average that won't get him, laughed out of the first round or two of fantasy drafts.
So I want to stay and riff on Sano for a minute because I also make a top 100 list and I had a really hard time ranking him because obviously his upside is so massive, but he does have, you know, not a low floor, but a floor that's there's a wide gap between his ceiling and floor, and he did miss all of last season. So talk a little bit about the gap between Sano at 5 and Gallo at 11. Obviously that's not monumental, but, you know, it's a significant gap for what I think a lot of people associate with a very similar skill set. So is this you really worried about Gallo's swing and miss? Are you just really, really confident in Sano? Sort of talk about the discrepancy there.
Yeah, I'm more confident in Sano, but sort of the area, and it, you know, it's hard to explain this really when you're writing this out, but, you know, outside of the top three, once you get to number 4, it's a pretty tight group from 4 down to about 12. I wouldn't make the argument for any of the guys that are in the, you know, sort of 10 to 12 range to be in the top 5, but the grading is much smaller than I think you might guess from reading it. I think Sano has the better approach. I think Gallo, I mean, obviously Gallo has enormous power, but I just don't. I have a little bit more confidence in Sano tapping into that power at the major league level in a major way.
Fair enough. All right, Mal, let's do a quick little toss of the keys to you. Why don't you pepper Brett with a few inquiries?
So Ben alluded to this, but you have Kyle Schwarber at 22. Have you adopted him, and why is he so high?
Because he can fucking hit. He's, you know, we've talked about Schwarber a lot on this podcast, and, you know, I'm well aware that I'm the high guy here on him, but I think he will maintain that catcher eligibility for roughly the first 3 to 4 years of his major league career. I don't think he's an everyday catcher, but I think he is enough of a catcher to keep the eligibility. And even if he is an outfielder, I really believe in the bat. I really think he's a, you know, potential 25 plus homer hitter. And, you know, I think he's a guy who can hit for a little average too. I think he's someone who could clear 270, 275 pretty reasonably. So it's really just the bat. I mean, there's no expectation that he's going to be an everyday catcher for 10 years. That's extremely unlikely to happen. But it's also important to note that it's not a reflection on his performance in pro ball. I mean, that you know, obviously is nice to see, but that's not anywhere near the dominating factor in why he's this high on the list. He can flat out hit, and I think he'll hit all the way up.
All right, cool. And as a follow-up question, you have Jesse Winker down at number 29. I'm going to ask you to separate your Kyle Schwarber from catcher and just view him as outfield only. As if we're talking about only outfield, who would you rather have, Kyle Schwarber or Jesse Winker?
I'd rather have Winker. If you told me that Schwarber was absolutely never going to play a game at catcher, they're pretty close. I mean, I like Winker a lot. I think Winker is a very high average hitter, and I think in that park he can push 20 home runs. So, you know, maybe in a park that he gets ticked up a little bit because of where he's going to play. But it's definitely close. He's not Schwarber is just a tick behind just because the difference between them in average is, I think, just slightly more than the difference, the advantage that Schwarber has over Winker in the power department.
Cool. Thank you so much. Craig, how about you? Your turn.
I wanted to know where would Yoan Moncada rank?
He actually shows up in the piece. He shows up at number 8. I know you're being sarcastic, but
oh, good. Okay. Yes.
I like me some Yoan Moncada. But I mean, let's not anoint him the number 1 prospect in baseball quite yet.
Now that he's a Red Sox, you could.
I don't know. Maybe behind Henry Owens.
Bold.
A slightly more serious question. Steven Souza, you have at 70. And I guess I'm interested in kind of the thought process behind that, not because I disagree with it at all, but because that's someone I think I would find extremely hard to rank, just because he is at the major league level, but he is 25. He hasn't proven anything at the major league level, but he's been really good kind of the last 3 years. He's just an interesting guy who I think has gotten more attention because he was traded, and that naturally makes us look at guys a little closer. But I guess I'm just interested in your thought process behind that, because I think it would be a tremendously difficult guy to value. I think there's a case for putting him inside the top 50, and you know, there's a case for having him lower than you do. I just kind of interested to hear what you have to say on that.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys that I have had all over this list in various iterations, both higher and lower. In the end, I mean, you kind of hit on the main points. He's definitely, if we're ranking all these guys for 2015 value only, he's clearly, I think, top 5 of this group. But I mean, that's playing time based more than anything else. He is 25, and you're absolutely right. He hasn't proven anything at the major league level. He's killed the minor leagues for a few years now, but he's going to have to do it at the major league level in order to be, you know, moved up into the area that it was somewhat tempting to put him in while making the list.
All right, that sounds good to me.
All right, let's do one more round, and then we can let Brett ask us a question for a minute or two. Hopefully then we won't have time to talk about relievers. I want to ask you about Alan Hansen, way down at 86, who's had a pretty interesting prospect journey from a fantasy point of view. I think he was much more highly thought of a few years ago when people thought he might stick at shortstop. That's pretty much universally regarded as ain't going to happen now. And now I wonder if he's a little underrated, not even necessarily on this list, because I think a lot of lists don't even have him top 100. But maybe I think he should be a tiny bit higher on just a fantasy list, because you have his realistic ceiling as Daniel Murphy, and I think that's absolutely perfect cross-racial comparison aside. So talk a little bit about, I don't really know, either Hansen specifically or guys like Hansen in the abstract and sort of your thought process when you have to rank them.
Yeah, I mean, guys like Hansen present great trade opportunities. And, you know, across a lot of these lists, I would, to be honest, I would expect him not to, you're right, I would expect him not to be on there. And I think that's a mistake. You know, he's one of those guys that I look at on the list and I want to move up and I just can't quite do it. We know his proximity. We know what he's capable of. But, you know, there's a, you know, while I do have a realistic ceiling of Daniel Murphy, I think that's about all you can hope for out of Hansen at this point. And if he doesn't get anywhere near that, I wouldn't be terribly surprised. He has challenges kind of everywhere. He's not going to really contribute a ton in any category. So he's going to have to really kind of make the most of what he has if he wants to cross that threshold from being, you know, just barely above replacement level to being someone who you actively want to keep from year to year. So, you know, there are other guys. There are certainly other guys that fall into that category. And you know, we talk about prospect fatigue and what that means. But when you see a player who has been on lists like this and has sort of fallen down, and honestly, especially when they often get compared with a player who has done much better than them. I mean, Alan Hansen came up. Broke out the same year that Gregory Polanco broke out. And we know what happened to Polanco, and Hansen's just sort of, not only has he sort of fallen down, but he also is not Gregory Polanco. And that's through no fault of his own, but being lumped in, I think, makes it an even tougher mental exercise for people to separate the thought of Hansen without the disappointment of Hansen, if that makes sense. So that's pretty much the thought process. He's definitely a guy who needs to be on the list, and I'm very curious to see what he does this year, because frankly I wouldn't be surprised if he saw the majors at some point this season if the Pirates need him.
Fair enough. Mal, would you care to ask Brett about, I don't know, Clint Frazier or Dom Smith or someone else we talk about all the time?
I'm going to ask him about Steven Matz. I saw what you did with your realistic ceiling and your realistic floor. So why don't you go ahead and give me the real realistic ceiling and the real realistic floor and why you've come to those conclusions.
Sure. I think he's... I used this in the write-up, and I think it's... You know, from watching the player who I'm going to talk about, it makes a lot of sense. Although if you haven't, I'm in the market and I watch them a lot anyway. But the guy who I think of is Jonathan Neese, and the guy who people wanted Jonathan Neese to be when before people realized who Jonathan Neese was, sort of that, you know, good ratio. Not terribly high strikeout pitcher, but a guy who has strong contributions across all four categories. I don't think Matz is going to be, you know, a 200 strikeout guy. He probably won't even be a 180 strikeout guy. He's not going to be a someone who puts up 1.03, 1.05 whips. He's going to be a consistent contributor. He's not going to be a star, which is part of the reason why I found that article and so amusing, and then use that as the ceiling and the floor. If you haven't looked up the New York Daily News article on Steven Matz, I make fun of it because it's ridiculous, but it's actually a really good background on who Matz is. It just comes with totally unnecessary comparisons.
Cool. I mean, that's all I got, Craig.
Yeah. So, I guess I wanted to know from Brett, and then I will expand it out kind of to the whole group. My article for the Futures Guide is about guys who are not on this list, and I also restrict myself to not using your honorable mentions, who will jump up onto this list. So I guess a version of that question would be, who are guys that you have kind of on the back half of this list who you think have the best chance of being, let's say, top 30 going into next year? So I would say that obviously to Brett, but then I'm interested to see kind of who else you guys are looking at to make that type of jump.
I'll throw out a couple of names. I'll try to keep it to guys that are, I'm gonna naturally cut myself off on guys that are sort of 75 or lower. One that jumps into my mind is Trey Turner. He's sort of a people have a lot of opinions of him, but he does have a lot of speed, and he showed himself well in the Midwest League in his debut. You know, he should have played in a major college program, but if Turner shows that he can hit as he moves up the minors, and it's going to be a little bit more difficult because he is the player to be named later in the trade. So he's why am I blanking? It's the Will Myers trade, right? I'm losing my mind. It is the Will Myers trade.
It's actually the James Shields trade.
It's the James Shields trade. Yes. Whatever. So he's going to be sitting out the first, my guess is 2 months of the season. He signed pretty much right after the draft. So I think they can announce it maybe the second week of June. But if he shows that he can hit and shows a little bit of pop, which is both are things that he's capable of, that combined with the speed that he can show could really fly him up this list a bit. The other guy who I will use almost any excuse to talk about is Rafael Devers, who's his swing is awesome. He's an all bat prospect, and I would not be surprised to see him really just explode in his first full stateside season. So those would be two guys I like to make a big jump. So if we're going to go around, why don't I throw that question to Ben?
Ben.
I hope he's breading.
Hello.
Hey.
Was the mute on?
Sorry, I was searching for vacuum bag discounts. Yes, the mute was on. I think those are two really good names. I don't necessarily believe this person has a high probability of being on the front half of this list, but if we're talking about someone who just has the potential to do so, Luis Severino for the Yankees. I think the consensus view on this podcast is that he's a reliever, but you know, let's say he holds up over a full season this year and demonstrates an ability to throw, I don't know, 170 innings, and he's as dominant as we sort of saw him be at times last year. I don't doubt the stuff. The stuff's really, really good, and there are lots of other industry sources I respect who do think he's a starter, and I haven't seen him in person yet. So sort of the sources I trust more tell me reliever, and I think we all agree on that, which is why he's down here. But if he proves us wrong, I mean, I think he's easily someone who could be top 30, top 40 next year. Mao?
I think if we're going off of names just on the back half of this list, the one name that I mean, there are a couple of names that jump out at me, but the one name that really jumps out at me is Alexander Reyes. This is a guy who's got a big fastball and just a bitch of a curveball. And, he's got, you know, the fastball breaking ball combination is really good, but the thing that he really started working on in the second half of last year is a changeup, and that started coming around for him, and it started leading to better results. It flashed just a little bit, it flashed solid for me, and sometimes it would go into plus, but I think if that guy, even if he gets like a 50 changeup and he's working with the fastball curveball combination that he has, I mean, he's going to start shooting up the list. I mean, he's going to have to make some effort with his body. You know, there's some danger there. It looks to be like it could be a high maintenance type of body, but I like him. I think he'd be a high riser if the changeup keeps coming along like he was showing in the second half of last year. Tukey, we've talked about Tukey in the past, and that's a guy who's going to ride the helium pretty quick. Craig, I'm going to leave your guy there because I know you want to talk about him. And then, I mean, you know, Dozier, I don't know about the front half of the list, but I do want to talk about him just a little bit. And it's, you know, the package isn't going to be impact. I mean, it's not that he's like a special type of player, but I think that he's a competent enough third baseman, and he's got, you know, just generally good feel for what he's doing at the plate to where I think he'd be a pretty league average third baseman, which, you know, I don't know if that pushes him into the top 50 or anything, but that's just a player that I really like. And, you know, I think he can crack the major league level and be pretty solid for the rest of his career there. Craig, what about you? You got any high risers there?
Yeah, I'll throw out a couple names. I assume the guy that you that you left alone is Forrest Wall, but I think we've kind of covered him enough in depth that I don't need to bring him up. I don't know if he can get as high as 30. Maybe he can, but I like I said, we've kind of covered him. One of the names I wanted to highlight was Brandon Drury, who you have at who Brett has at 93. I don't know if he'll spend enough time in the majors to exhaust his eligibility, but if he doesn't, I think as someone who is a polished hitter and who should be ready to contribute in a lot, you know, in a park that has good factors, I think he's someone who could be at least on the periphery of that discussion, especially if he proves he can play second base, which is generally a position of need for a lot of fantasy teams. And the other name I'd throw out there is Brad Zimmer, who I hope to get a bunch of looks at because he's going to be in the Carolina League this year. But he's another polished guy. He's already 22, but he's going to be in high A this year. And I think he's going to I think he's going to hit really well. I think there's a possibility he gets to double A. And I think his timetable and ability could push him at least into that discussion, if not into the top 30 overall. So those are the two names I'd have. Brett, do you kind of disagree with any of the names that we've tossed out there, or how are you seeing it?
No, those are pretty much the names that I figured would get tossed out there. just for my sake, Drury was a guy who I was considering talking about, but I think there's a decent chance he will exhaust that eligibility. There are two positions that the Diamondbacks are just not particularly strong at, and they may very well feel no push to bring him up, but he could force the issue. You know, they have Yasmani Tomas, who's going to kind of fall down a little bit at third base and then get moved to the outfield, and then there's Jake Lamb, and he's really nothing all that interesting. In second base, you have Aaron Hill, and I like Aaron Hill to kind of turn things around this year, but he's no lock to do that or to stay healthy. So there's certainly paths for Drury, but I agree. I mean, he can hit, and you know, he's one of those guys that started out off the list, got onto the list, and frankly, if I was re-ranking the list right now, he'd be even higher. He's someone who I'm glad you brought up.
Loving Drury and giving me shit for liking Cecchini is nuts because they're very similar. But can I ask one?
No, I don't know.
In fantasy profile,
he's got more. Drury's got more power.
There's impact power. I mean, well, not. I mean, there's more power there.
Impact
there's,
power.
There's more power.
No, there. No.
But I think the difference is that Drury's downside is third base, and Cecchini's downside is outfield.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, Cecchini can play third base. I don't know if he's not amazing. So I get that if you have a competent or an above average third baseman, you're going to move him. But he's not a liability at third.
You give everyone crap about bringing up the same people, and somehow you're talking about Garrett Key.
Well, Drury is a sore spot for me. Everyone loves Drury now and thinks Cecchini's garbage. But okay, I will stop.
Let's be fair. I had Drury at 93. I have Cecchini in the honorable mention. He probably would have been either. He probably would have been 103.
It's a huge gap, Brett.
Huge gap. Huge gap.
I'll bring up one more name, and it is a little bit of homerism, but I do think he has the chance to fly up the list, and that's Grant Holmes. He's touched 98 in the past, and I think if he can get back to that ability while pitching every fifth day, he's someone who could move really fast and has the stuff to pitch towards the top of the rotation. So that's all I'll say on him. But I think he's another name to watch.
So, Brett, real quick, I want to sort of ask you the inverse of Craig's question, because I feel like it's not something we talk about all the time.
No, I love this.
Do you have any guys who you think are, you know, sort of like what we talked about with Alan Hansen, who are perhaps likely to, you know, hit a snag developmentally and fall down this list only to rise again someday? I think of a guy like Matt Olson, who's leaving the Cal League, and people probably won't understand that. So, you know, even though his overall numbers will look worse, even if he produces in double A, I bet you people, you know, don't take that sort of league adjustment into account. So that's one example from me. But can you think of any other examples on this list?
Oh, yeah. I can think of a couple examples and for a couple different reasons. One guy that jumps out to me is Reimer Liriano. Reimer Liriano was looking at playing time and now is not. And he should put up numbers in AAA, but there's probably not going to be much playing time available for him. And he's going to he might fall into that sort of forgotten range where he sort of lingers an extra year in the minors for no reason whatsoever. Through no fault of his own. And I could see him falling down a lot. I think he's fallen down a lot now anyway. So he might be an example of that now, even though I'm still pretty high in them from a fantasy perspective. You have different guys. The one that comes to mind for me is as more of a developmental thing is Nick Williams. I mean, I like Williams a lot from a talent perspective, but it's going to take some time with Williams. He's going to need some development to get there, and he's going to hit that stretch where it just looks pretty bad. And he's got the talent to come out of it. So I think he's a guy who you can kind of trade for when he bottoms out a little bit more. Why don't we all go around and kind of pick a guy for this? Let's go with Craig.
Ah, son of a bitch. I was just looking for the guy I would pick. A lot of the guys I keep thinking of are guys who probably exhaust eligibility anyway. I'm going to say, someone like Albert Almora. I don't know. I like him, but I think, you know, if he doesn't hit as well as we think he's going to, he's basically kind of like a mediocre speed guy, and that's it. And I understand he has power, but if he doesn't hit like we think he's going to, he's not going to get enough power to matter. So I think for someone at 56th, he has a lot of ability to be more of like a lower 90s type guy going forward. Ben?
I already picked Matt Olson, so I'm gonna cop out and kick it to Mal.
Oh, good point.
Wow, what a jerk! I'm gonna pick the legend here, and that's just because I think that
that's a good choice. That's a good choice.
Yep, it is a good choice.
I think, you know, in the years past, we kind of thought he was gonna be like this. You know, he had the potential to be a five category contributor. He's already, you know, starting to grow up a little bit, and we don't necessarily think that the speed's gonna hold. We don't know what the position's gonna be. We don't really necessarily. I just think that, you know. There's a lot of variability inherent with catching prospects. And you know, Ben, you did something on this, I think last year, right? Where, you know, catching prospects just, they're super volatile and they're not very reliable. I think that of the names on the list, Jorge Alfaro is one of the guys that just kind of jumps out at me. It's, you know, if he has a down year, that's one of those guys who's just going to get downgraded and can fall off. So, I'm going to go with him.
Cool. Brett, anything you wanted to ask us about this list before we shift gears?
We might as well get we don't have to really go into the explanations, but we might as well ask the one generic question that we always get asked, which is, who's the guy that's not on the list that you would have put on the list or you expect to be a no-brainer as soon as maybe mid-season. We can just do quick hit names. So, Ben, do you have a guy in mind there?
Okay, yeah, I wouldn't. I think I agree with you not putting him on the list now, but it would not surprise me if Derek Fisher messes shit up in the low minors.
I love Derek Fisher.
Do you really love Fisher, or are you just saying you love Fisher?
No, no, I really do. Derek Fisher was number 102. Derek Fisher is I wanted to make room on for him on this list so badly, and I just couldn't do it in the end.
Damn it! Craig just sent me his. This is the piece that Craig wrote in the BP Futures Guide, which is coming out soon, by the way. Basically, he wrote about players on the precipice who could factor in next year, and he sent me a really good name in this. So if no one says it, I'll come back to it, but I'll back off for now.
Mal?
I'm going to be cheap, and I'm just going to take Gleyber Torres because I think he's going to fucking just destroy shit in low A.
Craig?
Yeah, I have a lot of names to choose from considering I wrote the article on this. I'll just say two really quick. One, Wilmer Defoe for the Nationals, and two, Taylor Guerrero for the Rays. I think he puts together a healthy year this year and pushes up this list next year.
Good names for this will surprise neither Mao nor Craig because we all sort of fell in love with him last year together. Huge bust potential, but Lewis Brinson. If he starts putting it together, Lewis Brinson is a motherfucker, as Parks would have said if he was still with us. So if Brinson can do some things, he's got potential to be top 50 if he can actually hit a little.
Are Parks' knees still with us?
They left long ago.
I would rather talk about relief pitchers than have Parks' knees.
Oh.
Well, then let's do that.
All right. Speed round.
All right, we're going to talk about relief pitching now?
Mm-hmm.
We have to.
Does everyone agree that, in some order, Kimbrel, Holland, Jansen, and Chapman are the top four?
Yes.
I disagree dispassionately.
Craig?
I think, in a dynasty, yeah. Jansen's injury opens the door for Betances to be kind of, or Robertson to be the fourth guy this year. But
sure, that's fair. Number five, what are you guys thinking? Like maybe Enya? Welcome back to episode 44 of Tino. As always, we will send you out with a little housekeeping. Please rate and review Tino on iTunes. We have had a bunch of great reviews lately, but the more the merrier. And getting to 100 reviews before the season is over would be an awesome goal for us. As you've probably heard us discuss on Twitter, all four of us will be in Arizona basically in exactly a week. So that's awesome. If you followed us last year, you know we had plenty of fun, but we sort of came short of having a great hashtag to use. So if you have any suggestions for a strong hashtag for Tino Arizona 2015 trip, let us know. You will win a prize. Probably not, but we'll say that on the air. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast. Get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at There Is No Off Season. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Mauricio at MRubio52. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in cheese ranking determiner, Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening. We'll get to you live from Arizona next time. And have a good night.
Bye.
Good episode. I thought it was fortuitous that the Swiss cheese comment came after we had the cheese ranking online.
I thought that was fortuitous as well.
Yeah,
good up, guys.
All right. I think we're ready, so let's just go ahead and get this fucker over with. Let's go ahead and go in five.
Hello?
It's the new intro.
That's the intro. That's 100% the intro.
I just meant from now on.
Yeah, that's going to be the permanent intro.
Brad, what are you doing? Brad.
Wait, hey, wait.
It's just getting better.
I think my headphones might be broken. I plugged in my headphones. I couldn't hear anything.
That's a good hint that they're not working.
Yeah, that's a pretty good sign.
Hold on, I'm going to try
again. Usually if you can't hear anything out of your headphones, that means they're broken.
Brett is deafer than Ben Lindbergh right now.
That's going to be my team name. That's going to be my team name.
Deafer than Lindbergh.
I'm still pretty sure it's true.
Yeah, they're definitely broken.
Oh no.
Do you have other headphones?
That are not broken? Don't do another broken pair.
No, my only other headphones are my phone ones that have a mic in it, so that's bad.
Mm. No, you can set the settings to use your.
Yeah, but we only have an hour and 20 minutes.
Did you turn them on?
Yeah.
You know, there's something handy you can do with a vacuum bag to help. You don't have any, so we're all.
Yeah, but we're out of vacuum bags. That's why I had to buy them.
That's a good point, actually. It's
sucks. That was the joke.
It's tough to argue with that logic.
Do I have another one? I think you can use mine for work.
No,
there you go.
I'm gonna go.
Oh, they're packed.
I'm gonna go headphones.
Okay, oh, you are.
Sir. Yep.
Wait, aren't you gonna echo then or no?
I shouldn't.
Hold on. Yeah. Okay. I'm all for Carolyn joining us on this show. We're only talking about relievers. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, she knows just as much as we do about where relievers are going to be in 2 years.